What do you get when you have one voiceover girl?
Oh, and me. That makes two voiceover girls.
Okay, when you have two voiceover girls, separated by one pond and two perspectives.
I know. You get the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast.
That's right. Let's listen as Rami and Jessica share their journey into the voiceover industry. Hi, and welcome to the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast. I'm Jessica Matheson.
Hi, I'm Rami Santosh.
Today we'll be exploring the question, what does it take to become a voiceover artist? And we will also discuss how you might know that you are one. So, Rami, what does it take to become a voiceover artist in your opinion?
Well, you might think it's really easy because all you need to do is grab a mic, start recording, and you're a voiceover artist. But actually, I'm going to break that down for you. It's not as simple as that.
What do you mean, Rami? I have a great voice. I have a mic. And I have recording software. Am I not on my way?
Well, that is a good start, but there is a little bit more that you need to do before you really are ready. So we're going to talk about some of these things that you need to prepare in advance as part of the journey to becoming a voiceover artist.
Ooh,
so they include thinking about yourself as a business. So there's a continuum from being on one end, a full-time voiceover artist, to the other end where voiceover is your hobby and you're doing it for your passion. And of course, you could be anywhere in between that as well. Mm-hmm. Then there's training and practice that you have to think about. And there's so many different types of training that you might do to become a voiceover artist. It might be in-person training, online training, self-guided training, coaching. And we're actually also going to discuss the fact that it's not standardized at the moment. And that's going to be quite interesting revelation for everyone. Yeah. And then something that surprised me too. And then we're going to go on and talk a little bit about setting up your space. And again, there's a continuum there. You might think about having a very professional setup to one that's more, what's the word, informal, shall we say, so temporary or permanent. And we'll also talk about the factors that are involved in that. So the costs, your budget, and what your needs are in terms of recording. Obviously, talk about the equipment that you'll need. And again, there's factors in terms of what your needs are and your budget. And finally, we're going to talk about getting yourself out there. So making an online presence, marketing, auditioning, and so on. So the really exciting things once you've got everything together.
Wow. So there really is quite a bit more to think about. How about we go through these one at a time, starting with thinking about business?
Yeah, sure. So when you're thinking about business, you want to consider whether you want to make voiceover your full-time profession, so it's your one and only career, or whether it's more of a hobby.
There's also another category of folks that are kind of in between, kind of like myself. So you have voiceover that you're trying to move to a full-time place, but you just can't yet because you have something else that you have to do to support you or whatever the reason might be.
I think a lot of people are in that position. However, for the purposes of this podcast, what we'll do is talk about everything that you need to do if you're intending to make this your full-time career. And of course, then that will apply to everyone else, but just on a different scale.
Gotcha.
Yep. So obviously, you just make your adjustments as you need to in terms of the advice that we're giving you.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good plan to me. Let's do it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think when we're discussing voiceover as a business, there's so much to think about that actually that is a huge topic in itself and perhaps deserves an entire episode on its own. Come back to structuring and setting up your business in another episode. So stay tuned, subscribe and connect with us on Facebook.
Shameless plug. I love it.
I know. There you go.
Okay. Now we've considered voiceover as a career and we've decided, yes, let's do that. What's the next step again?
The first thing you need to understand is there's actually not any standardized training program that's specific to voiceover. I know that's true in the UK. Does that apply to you in the US?
Yeah, same thing sort of applies. You might be able to find some classes at a college, whether it be community college level or university level, or classes that are designed for the community where you're not necessarily seeking a degree. You might find some of that stuff, but you won't find anything that's specific to voiceover. In fact, you might even find a degree program that's maybe like acting or theater or something along that line. And voiceover might be a piece of it, but it will not be the entire program.
So it sounds like the situation's the same across the pond. Voiceover is not a regulated industry at the moment.
Mm-mm.
And there isn't any group that would actually be monitoring what's going on with the industry, setting standards or certifying voiceover courses. But as you said, there's lots of different options out there to get training. We just need to be aware and work out the genuine training courses that will actually help you out and teach you useful voiceover techniques and so on.
So where do you get those? If you can't necessarily get them at a college or vocational training place, what do you do?
Well, in terms of getting online training, there's so much online training around. And obviously with the times that we're in with lockdown and so on, I think that's the key way to go right now. We've had a lot of opportunities opening up thanks to COVID this year. A lot of online training has become available in the UK. So there's training providers that offer really comprehensive programs such as Gravy for the Brain. And there's lots of other providers that offer regular webinars and workshops and a variety of voiceover topics. So you can drop in and drop out and learn whatever you can and whatever you wish to at your convenience. And that's good as well. And there's lots of different providers that offer shorter workshops throughout the year. And also, there are training providers that offer small group or one-to-one coaching sessions. And certainly there are some really great one-to-one coaches in the UK.
Same applies in the States, actually. The other training that I have seen is when a coach will provide a one-on-one session, maybe remotely or even in person. And then another piece of their training program is that they have some courses that they've taped, not taped, I guess, everything's digital anymore, isn't it? That they have recorded, and then you get online access to them for a monthly fee, and then you can go in and you can watch them when you have an opportunity rather than having to be at a specific session at a specific time. And then, of course, they also offer group workshops from time to time. A little bit of everything.
Well, sounds good. Catering for different needs for different people. Like we said, we're all in a continuum in terms of the way we want to look at voiceover.
Right.
So the next thing to consider is setting up your recording space.
What? Why do I need a specific space? I mean, the 1 hour online course about how to make six figures in a month doing voiceover said I just needed a mic and a good voice. I mean, why do I need a specific space, Mommy?
Well, my dear Jessica, let me teach you the ways of voiceover now.
Mm.
So it's absolutely a must that you have to be able to produce good quality recordings in order to succeed in voiceover. If you want to be chosen for the really good projects by the really good clients. I'm just going to talk a little bit about what you need to get together in order to create that space that will allow you to have good, decent quality recordings. So there's two things to consider. Firstly, the space that you're in. So it might be a room in your home or outside of your home, your garage, whatever. You need to think about two things, and it's all around noise. Okay, so noise. And we've discussed that previously in previous episodes. Okay, so you need to consider reverb. So that's all about the sound and the way it bounces around the room that you're in or the space that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And it will depend on a lot of different things. So the wall coverings you have, the floor coverings, and the kind of materials that you'll have around you,
right,
and how much that allows sound to bounce around and how much that will be picked up by your mic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to understand that and to work on your space in order to reduce the amount of reverb. Yeah. And the second is you want to try and cut down as much of the extraneous noise that you have. So that would be sound from outside of your space. So if you're near the high road, a busy road, then the traffic, if you've got a lot of animals around you, birds that hang around just outside your windowsill, and if they're chirping away, you need to kind of get rid of them, basically.
Right,
and
without a BB gun.
And if you've got noisy neighbours, you want to try and get rid of them too, if you can. or just work around it. Obviously, get up early or late, record late.
Maybe we should clarify for those people that are, what? Get rid of your neighbours? No, we mean get rid of their noise. Not really. Get rid of your neighbors. That would be bad.
No. We want to maintain social harmony. Yeah, so obviously have a chat with your neighbors and tell them what you do and work out a routine when you need to have your time to record, or you work around their routine and maybe record early or late or whatever works. Mm-hmm. So that's what I meant. On the theme of continuums, this is also on a continuum. Some people may have a dedicated space, you know, they might have a room that mm-hmm. they can dedicate and turn into their booth and office. Some people may not have that and may just use an area that can't be dedicated. And that's understandable as well. So we just have to work with what we've got. Some people just use a closet, even a wardrobe, mm-hmm. use suitable coverings for that in order to do their recordings. And there's different budgets, and that's what you really need to understand. You can get fantastic booths that can cost thousands of pounds mm-hmm. or dollars, or you can be very creative in the ways that you create your recording space from materials that you can purchase online, and you just develop those into a booth.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so now I have a recording space. What do I put in it?
Okay, so as you know, you will need a microphone. Okay, and you can get a huge variety of microphones. So we do want something that's reasonably good quality. The advice is to ask around, ask other voiceover artists, ask your mentors if you have some, read some reviews, do a bit of research in order to find a mic that falls within your budget. Again, you can get super expensive mics, but I don't think you really need a super expensive mic to begin with. But then you can also get really super cheap mics as well, and you probably want to avoid those as well. So something mid-range is probably a good place to start. Mm-hmm. You can get some good deals online. You can get packages where you get the microphone and pop shield and cradle and stuff like that. So yeah, it's worth considering. A lot of the mid-range brands are doing those packages too.
Right. Yep. Makes sense.
There's two different types of mic. There's USB mics. So they're the plug and play type where you just plug in your USB cord into the USB port, which you can plug in directly into your computer. Or XLR mics. Generally in the industry, the XLR mics are recommended simply because you'll use an interface and that will allow you to control your levels of gain, which is a recommended thing to do.
And gain means volume. So
that's
you
right.
you can control the recording volume, whereas with a USB mic, you don't have that kind of control. Because it is just a plug and play, you don't have any control over the sound that you're putting into that mic, unless it's you. You can't change it with an interface. You can only change you to make that sound change.
The USB mic's okay for certain types of work. So if the quality doesn't matter so much, for example, if you're doing podcasts or just low quality work, it's fine. You can use those and they're convenient. But if you try and get better quality voiceover work, the XLR mic is the recommended type to go for.
Yeah. And you even hear about some people that will have, you know, they'll have their home set up. And then if they have to travel, they sometimes will have a travel setup. And sometimes that travel setup will include a USB mic. And they will use it for maybe an audition that comes through from an agent or something like that while they're on vacation, knowing that that quality isn't necessarily the quality that they're going to need for the finished product, but it will be good enough to do an audition.
That's right. Absolutely. There's no harm in having one in your travel pack.
Mm-hmm.
But just having talked about microphones, I do want to emphasize that for a good voiceover artist, it's your voice technique and your room treatment that's actually more important
than
the type of mic that you have. If you're a really good voiceover artist and you've got good space, then you can get away with doing a decent recording on a cheaper mic, for
mm-hmm.
example,
mm-hmm.
because that's what counts. So a mic is a good thing. Good quality mic is important, but it's your training that's really going to take you far. It's the way you've treated your space in terms of dealing with the reverb and the extraneous noises that are key things.
For sure. I mean, if you have a wonderful mic that's great and sensitive and it's picking up all of this great stuff, if you don't have a good treated space, it's just picking up more of your reverb and your noise and everything because it is so good and sensitive. So yeah, if you don't have a good treated space, no mic is going to make you sound good.
Yeah, and in fact, it will work against you.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, if you're getting your XLR mic, then you'll also need to get your purchaser audio interface, which I mentioned. And obviously, there's lots of information around on different types of equipment that you can get and what's suitable and perhaps even recommended.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there's George the Tech, VOBS, Booth Junkie, and lots of Facebook groups, which all have lots of advice worth just checking out and searching these groups and getting the information that you can before you make your purchases.
Yeah. And so pro tip on those Facebook groups, something that you will see over and over again in Facebook groups once you join these Facebook groups is when a newbie comes in and says, hey, I have a question about whatever it is, and they will hear from half a dozen people, this has already been asked. Just search the group and you'll find answers to your questions. And they even recommend in a lot of their rules in the Facebook groups that if you have a question, first search the group then ask the question if you can't find it in a search, because the same questions get asked over and over again. And you're definitely going to have a range of answers where people are going to say, oh, yeah, you could just use a snowball mic, no problem. Or somebody's going to be like, no, don't use the eyeball thing on the microphone. No. And some people swear by it. So you kind of have to then decide what works for you based on the advice that you find in those groups. So you still have to, you can't have somebody be like, hey, this is what you're going to do. And you say, okay, that's what I'm going to do, because everybody's got an opinion and not all of them are the same.
I agree, but some opinions are better than others. I would recommend going to the people who have some experience and knowledge and are considered experts. So, and I think you'll get to find those people quite quickly. You'll realize who they are.
Yeah.
So just a few more things as we're talking about equipment that you'll want to consider getting. One of them would be your mic stand. So that's the thing that's going to hold the mic. Now, you might get desktop stand. So if you're planning to sit and record, then that's fine. But alternatively, you might want to consider getting a mic that will allow you to stand and record, or adjustable one, of course. You can get something that will allow you to sit and stand. This is important. And the reason I'm making this point is because it is important. When you're standing, you're able to hold a different posture to when you're sitting. And that will become important when you're recording. You need to be able to breathe properly. And something that's discussed a lot is physicality. So when you're recording, you need to be able to get into that recording. You need to be able to get into the script. And it's really important to be able to move around, use your arms and your whole body sometimes in order to really be able to voice the script. So standing is certainly recommended. But for long reads, for long narration work, audiobooks, etc., it's worth considering whether you want to sit down, because then you just don't want to get tired either.
Yep.
What do you do? Do you stand or sit?
Most of the time I sit, because I do a lot of audiobook work. But I have had some things that I have worked on where I have needed to stand. I've done some character work where I have to be able to really get into that character. And by getting physical in whatever it is that you're supposed to be emoting into the mic, it really helps you get to that place. So if, you know, like I'm angry or something like that, then I can stand with my fists at my side and, you know, just puff out my chest and get really mad. And that comes through in my voice.
Because I've done more sort of shorter projects, small scale. So I prefer to stand. And again, it's just about being able to use my body to get into the recording and to voice the words. But it is preference. But yeah. And then just a couple of other things that I'll mention. When you get your mic, if you're buying a pack, then you'll probably get the shock mount with it. And that's important because you don't ever hold your mic. Place it in the shock mount and that will absorb the vibration from any movement. So the noise doesn't come into the mic. It's just absorbed by the shock mount. That's why it's called a shock mount. And you'll also either separately or together in the pack get a pop filter. And that's important because that will help to reduce the plosives, the purrs and the burrs as you're breathing out while you're speaking.
Yeah, those will definitely spike in your recording, where it'll foul up your recording. You will have a spike in that recording that'll go above a certain level, and it'll actually sort of like cut off in your recording. And so it's really good to have that pop filter so that you can still get that nice crisp sound that you want without distorting your sound.
Of course, there are ways to deal with this in terms of the editing, but you really want to save editing time. So it's best to deal with these things at the point of origin.
Yeah. Yeah. And some things editing can't fix. You know, if you end up going to where it hits above a certain noise level and it cuts out, where you end up kind of having this distorted, strange sound, you can't fix that. You just have to redo it.
And that's just wasting time.
Absolutely. Total waste of time. Good. We're all about efficiency.
Now this, obviously, some people prefer using their Macs and other people prefer using a PC. And I think that's down to personal preference. But if you're using your laptop or PC computer, then you need to ensure it's quiet, because obviously the mic will pick up everything. So these days we get the more modern computers have SSD solid state drives, which are very quiet. I've got one of those just recently, so I'm really happy with that. So you just need to be careful of all possible sources of noise, and that might be coming from your equipment as well.
And some people, if they can't necessarily upgrade a computer for right now, sometimes a solution in the interim is to have your computer or your laptop outside of your booth, so that the fan or whatever is making the noise isn't creating noise in your microphone, and then having a monitor and a wireless keyboard and mouse inside your booth so that you can still control the computer, but not have the disruption from the noise of the computer.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's another source of noise equipment that you discover.
Isn't it crazy how much noise there is that you just ignore?
Every source possible.
I mean, yeah, I like what you said in one of the previous episodes, I think we become somewhat neurotic about it. Like, that makes noise.
I can hear something. I don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah, I see two themes in this podcast. Cancel the noise, and it's on a continuum.
And it is. Moving on swiftly now to software. Mm-hmm. You will need software in order to be able to edit your recordings, to clean it up and maybe do some fancy things with it afterwards. Again, on a continuum, there are some free software packages that are around that can be downloaded off the internet, such as Audacity. That's a commonly used one. There's Ocean Audio. There might be others as well that I'm not aware of. Are you aware of any others?
Not super familiar with others. I started out with Audacity. That's the one. And I actually still use Audacity. My plan eventually is to go to a different upgrade to a software where I have a little bit more capability and it's a little bit easier, and has technical help if I need it. And that's one thing about Audacity. It's freeware, it's shareware. And so it's run by volunteers. So trying to get customer service is very difficult.
But it's a good place to start.
It's a great place to start.
If you're on a budget
and
you just want to be able to do copy and cut and paste stuff, that's absolutely fine. And to do basic editing work is fine, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I still use it.
And then you can work up the continuum that we're talking about and purchase software, which has more advanced features. So it's all about where you are, what your budget is, what your needs are. But the free stuff is out there to use to begin with if you need to.
Yep, absolutely. You have mentioned a lot of things that are really important for us to think about and consider. Why don't you tell, just for fun, you know, why don't you tell us about your setup story and what you're using now and maybe your future plans, just to give people an idea.
Sure. So for me, my budget was the key driving factor behind my decisions about how I was going to set up. And when I say budget, it was a limited one to begin with. So I had to be creative. Let's put it like that. That's the best word right now. You know, I was quite fortunate that I'd connected with Gravy for the Brain and I was listening to the webinars and connecting with other new voiceover artists. So we were able to discuss creativity and setups. That was really important. I started off obviously purchased my equipment, which is professional equipment, so reasonable, you know, mic and stand, and I got a reflection filter as well, which is great. And I needed to find a space, and I first of all used one room, and that didn't work because I was on the just off the main road, and obviously I could hear the cars going by. There was no way I'd be able to cut that sound out with whatever materials. So then I shift to another room in the middle of the flat, but again it was off the main road, and even though it was a smaller room, I was still getting too much noise, and I tried various things like blocking it with pillows and blocks and this, that, and the other, but it really didn't help a huge amount. So then I moved into a third room. So you can see how much frustration there is, you know, moving around. I was moving around my home trying to find the best place possible, and I had to kick out my mother of her room.
Sorry, Mom.
Yeah, exactly. So she has the quietest off the main road, and there's a really good quiet corner here. Well, there's two corners. So I tried the first one near the window, which was fine. And I had that sound checked. So what that means is I recorded a piece and then I sent it off to a sound engineer to listen to. And he actually said it was fine. It was good quality. I was getting good quality sound. But then I, for some reason, decided to move to the other corner, just completely away from the window. And I think this is the best place in the whole house. So I spent several months doing this. I'd go into one room, set up everything, record, get feedback. Then I'd move into another room and record, and get feedback, and then moved in the third room. So it's taken months to find the right spot in my home that actually works and is comfortable for me and comfortable for everyone else. It was quite a process. It wasn't a quick thing. It was a journey.
Wow.
Yeah. And my poor family, they really had to put up with a lot. Every two weeks or so, I was saying, can I move into this room now?
Can I have your room, please? By the way, it's not a request.
yeah, need your room, get out.
Nice.
Yeah. So what about yourself? Oh, and I should mention the moving blankets. I was looking at different materials to surround me in order to reduce the room reverb and possibly some extraneous noises. You get noise reduction blankets. These are specifically produced blankets, types of covering that reduce noise. But I was looking for a cheaper option. Somebody suggested using removal blankets, so blankets that you get when you're moving house and you need to protect your furniture. But I went on this journey and I became an expert in removal blankets for a while. Yeah, I went online, did loads of research, and I even purchased some. I was trying different materials to hang around me in order to enclose my space and create that right sound.
Yeah.
So, yeah, tried duvets initially. So everyone's duvets were taken from their bedrooms and and they were hung around this frame that I purchased. And then it was removal blankets and then everything else going on with me moving around the house. So, yeah, it's been quite a journey.
The adventures in setting up a booth. Mm. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about yourself? Did you have any difficulties?
I mean, I actually was a business owner prior to doing voiceover, and I have this commercial building. I live upstairs and the business piece of it is downstairs, and it's like an old like lodge. And so there were these different rooms down the hallway that used to be lodging, and I thought about using one of those rooms, but they are escape rooms and making income for me at this point. So couldn't do that. But I had a room, a wall added on to a part of a room to extend one of the escape rooms so that we could get more people into it. And once we started trying to set that up, we realized that wasn't going to work. So I decided I was going to adopt this space because it seemed just right for my booth. The thing was, it had three walls, not four, because it was a piece of the room that I had built. And so I had to make that fourth wall out of, like you, I actually had a whole bunch of old comforters and quilts and things like that to staple. Really, we took a staple gun to our ceiling, which is wooden. And so staple guns, you know, and then that was not working quite right. It was reflecting a lot of sound, and it turned out it was because they were perfectly flat, and you need to add sort of the folds into these blankets. They can't lay perfectly flat, or you've just created a new tight space that can reflect sound. So, you know, pulled them down, put them back up with pleats in them, you know. And then as far as the floor was a wood floor, so I had to get an area rug to try to dampen the sound. And then the walls were sheetrock walls, right? So those were reflecting sound. And I was trying to think of an inexpensive way to treat these walls because I like you, I had to work on a budget. And so I couldn't really order a bunch of panels. So I went to a secondhand store for home building materials. There's like the Habitat for Humanity has these kinds of stores. They're called Restores. The one that we have here locally is not run by Habitat for Humanity, but the same kind of thing where when people are going through and remodeling their houses, if they have things that can be reused, they'll pull them down gently instead of just busting them up, and they'll donate them to this place. And they just happened to have, I went in there, I just kind of had the bright idea like, hey, those old drop ceilings with those acoustic tiles, I wonder if those would work. So I went to this store and I found that they had piles of these old acoustic tiles. They must have taken them out of a commercial building or something. Mm. And so I bought a bunch of them for like, I think they were like $1 a piece, you know. And so I, you know, put those on the walls to help with the sound. And even that had a lot of reflection. And so I had to then put like a quilt over the acoustic panels with pleats, you know, to make sure that I didn't have all of this bounce back. And then, you know, then it was like the desk. I just had an old wooden desk that I pulled together and had to put some something over the parts of the desk that were reflecting sound. It certainly didn't look like the recording studios you see on TV when you see actors, you know, recording their parts for the cartoon movie that they're in or something like that. It's certainly not as glamorous as that, but it does the job.
Well, that's right. At the end of the day, it's the quality of the recording that counts. It's not how your booth looks. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really funny because you could say, I have a broadcast quality studio, and you know in somebody's mind they're imagining something that has all of this professional soundproofing and the glass that they can look through, and that is just not what most people have. You know, I mean, there are even some people that don't have a space in their house where they can have their sound booth all the time, and they do things with crates or totes. Moving like that, storage totes, and they line those and they put the mic inside them, and they can get that about the only part of them that fits in there is like their mouth, you know.
I've also heard of some saver artists, they actually record in their car, so they'll drive over to a spot that's really quiet and then just record in there.
Yeah.
And it works. And it works for them. Yeah, fantastic.
Oh, so many an artist, the voiceover artist, lives in their closet. Clothes are great for sound dampening.
Absolutely. They'll absorb the noise, and you've got a fantastic space and you get a good recording out of that. Why not?
Right. Yeah. You do what you got to do. And, you know, COVID really brought that out, because a lot of people went from recording in studios to having to go home and try to figure out a space quickly. And a lot of materials were unavailable because everybody was doing the same thing. So people were having to get creative, whether they were working with a budget or not.
That's right. Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes.
So we've all been inventing ways.
I've seen some really cool things. I being on an online networking event, there was one lady that has kind of a good solution for her sound panels. She had made these sound panels, like a thin board or something like that, with quilting batting, and then she put some fabric over it. So she put these squares, and so she's got this sound absorption, but because she picked nice fabric, it looks really cool.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I forgot to mention, when I was in the smaller room, we still had a window, and so that I was off the road, so I could still hear cars. So I thought, it has a wide windowsill. Mm-hmm. So I had packs of toilet rolls. So I stacked these up to try and, you know, block the window. I couldn't think of anything else at the time. So I thought, these large packets of 6 to 12 toilet rolls all stacked up into the window. It didn't solve the problem, unfortunately, but we just had lots of toilet roll in the house.
It was your storage solution, not your sound solution, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So you do everything you can.
Oh, yeah. I had at one time this desk that I had that had the metal bars on it. Mm-hmm. I had to wrap a bunch of like towels around the bars because they kept reflecting sound, and I kept getting a tinny, echoey sound. And yeah, it looked stupid, but it worked.
That's it. So as long as you've got a good recording, that's what counts, and that's what all the people hear. They're not going to see anything. They're not going to see how you've got that sound.
I've actually even heard of people maybe going on vacation or something like that, and getting, I can't remember who it was who was talking about it, but they were talking about how they went on vacation and they took their travel setup, their mic and their interface and their laptop. They had a job come through that they needed to get done, and it was for like a national commercial or something like that. And in their hotel room, while everybody, I think they were at Disney or something, while everybody was riding the rides or something, they came back to the room and they grabbed all of the covers off the bed and made a pillow fort.
Yeah.
And sat there and recorded a national commercial that you hear on TV all the time underneath a pillow fort and blankets. You do what works.
Brilliant. Like I said, it's all about being creative.
Oh, yeah. So I've thought about voiceover as a business. I've gotten training. I still like voiceover even after training. I've decided I think it's right for me. So I've set up my recording space. I've filled it with the necessary equipment. Seems like I'm about ready to go out into the wild. What do you say, Rami? What's next?
That's right. You are almost there now, Jessica.
Yay! I'm so happy.
You're good. You're ready to get yourself out there. So we need to think of a few more things now in order to do that successfully. So you need to have an online presence. You need to think about how you're going to market yourself and the process of auditioning and what that's all about. So in terms of having an online presence, it's really important to have a website. A website is like your business card nowadays. Obviously, business cards are gone. But you need to have your dedicated website that's actually going to tell people who you are and what you do. There's different options in terms of setting up a website. If you haven't already got one, you can either set it up yourself, so do it yourself. Now, that's something that I had to do because I was on a budget and I wasn't able to afford to get the services of a professional designer.
Same here.
And I think that's the same for you. Mm-hmm. So we went on our journeys in terms of learning our graphic design skills on top of everything else I've been learning. But I'm glad, to be honest, that I went down that route. I hated it at the time because it was just not another thing to do. I'm not a graphic designer. I partly resented it, but I am so glad, having done it, that I did get my own website because it's personal. I've done it myself. I can change it. I can tweak it. It's under my control. And
yes.
It's so personal.
That
so
is kind of nice.
I'm pleased that I did that.
Yeah, if you have somebody else controlling your website, then if you see something, you have to then go to them and you have to rely on them to do it and possibly even incur a fee. And if you do it yourself, that's kind of the nice thing is you get a wild hair and you decide to put something on your website. You can just do it.
Straight away, immediate, can just change, make the changes that you need to. I'm glad for it now. With hindsight, I'm pleased that I did go down that route. Mm-hmm. And obviously the other option is to get somebody in to do it for you. If you've got a good friend, that's great. Otherwise, you can find a professional. And there's pros and cons with everything, but you have to just work with your budget and what your needs are at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing apart from your website is having a social media presence. And that's really important these days as well. I mean, I'm not from that generation where I grew up with social media. It's all very new to me.
Thank goodness,
so, you
right?
know, I only set up a LinkedIn account. Wow. The other things, I didn't actually need one up to now. I didn't need a website or social media accounts to promote myself and to find customers because I just was in a different line of work. So having to learn all these new things and use so many new tools and platforms has been part of the journey for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, me too. I had a personal Facebook page and I had a business Facebook page for my business that's not VoiceOver. And I had an old LinkedIn account because I think at some point when I was probably even before I even worked for myself, when I was working in banking, I remember learning about this LinkedIn thing and how it was really good for networking. And I think I created an account and there it sat for like, I don't know, 10 years. So I had to dust it off.
Update it, renew it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you've just made that point that was mentioned. You can either use your personal accounts and mix them with your business, or you can just have separate ones. So I think that's a personal choice and you have to decide what works for you. Personally, I decided to create a separate Facebook account for my voiceover work and my LinkedIn account is solely dedicated to my work.
Yeah. So I have my personal Facebook page. I also have one for my business that's not voiceover. That's a separate page. It's a business page, but I chose not to set up a voiceover page specifically because I have a lot of connections on my current personal Facebook page that I don't know if I could get them to move to my professional voiceover Facebook page. And I want to be able to communicate with them or, you know, allow them to see what I'm up to because they're people that are in business and might be able to use my services. And then like my Facebook page overall is pretty PG. I don't say anything on my Facebook page that's too much one way or another, really. Mm-hmm. And so it's pretty safe. I don't have to worry about like, ooh, if I say this on my Facebook page, you know, I might post a meme or something that has a word in it, but usually I warn it and warn people and say, hey, there's some language, but this is really funny. So here you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think people can forgive me for that, or they don't even need to forgive me because they find it funny, you know? So I chose to go that route with my Facebook page. And of course, like LinkedIn, I had an old page that I kind of dusted off and I added things to it for voiceover. And it was kind of the same sort of thing. I've been in business for myself in my community for almost 10 years with my other business, and I've made a lot of good connections that I wanted to keep. So rather than create a new page and try to move all those people over, I thought that I would just have one page that encompassed all of my businesses.
Brilliant. So in terms of marketing, you can have the continuum again.
What? A continuum? No.
You can obviously decide to do some direct marketing, direct contacting potential clients, either email or telephone or whatever it might be, whatever your chosen method is that works for you. I've heard that some people are trying business networking, which is an interesting route, I think. So I know that's been thrown up by a few voiceover artists. Some people actually swear by it. They prefer that to just going to a business meeting where they know there might be potential clients or potential people who might refer them to possible clients. A slightly longer route. Some people find that useful. I've done a few meetings recently as well. Not that I've got some work immediately, but I think I've got good referrals and I put myself out there to a lot of people. And I have had people saying, oh, pass your name to so-and-so and so-and-so. And I've had a few people giving me some names of production companies, etc. So I definitely think there's something in it. It is time consuming. You have to attend these meetings. At the moment, obviously, they're all on Zoom, but you do have to sit there, listen to everyone else and presenting yourself. And hopefully, if you're good natured and you have some gratitude, you'll hopefully try and give back and make some referrals back as well, which is obviously the point of a lot of these meetings. So yes, that's one route, probably a longer route.
Yeah, you kind of have to educate people when you're networking to other businesses that aren't production, that aren't, that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure. VoiceOver has always been quite exclusive, as we said previously. Not everyone has heard of VoiceOver as such as a career, and they probably haven't met a VoiceOver artist before. Some people are quite interested and intrigued, and other people are fazed by it, and they still don't know what's going on. So like you said, it's education. If you're putting yourself out there, then at least they know you exist, and that's a service they may one day need to use.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we've just talked about the social media marketing, so using that different platforms to get your message out there and to show your presence and connect with others. So what have you tried? Jessica, then what do you feel has worked for you?
So I have done a little bit of all of it. So I've done a little bit of direct marketing, very little. That is one place where I struggle, and I definitely am working on that right now to try to put together a good, solid packet of just, I guess, information to be able to reach out and send these emails and say, hey, here is, you know, a link to, or here's a link to my, you know, website where you can listen to my demo or whatever I'm going to say. Get some good templates together so that I can have sort of a basic idea of what I want to say when I market, but then be able to customize them to the individual that I am sending an email to. But what I feel like I need to make sure that I have as well is anything that they might ask a question about. So a lot of times, I think whenever you talk to anybody about this, they're like, oh, that sounds awesome. How much? You know, and so like that's something that I've got to be able to have just a basic idea, a basic rate card, you know, that says, well, here's my basic studio fee and here's, you know, an idea of what this type of thing costs. And or what you did on your website was really fabulous. Like, I need to make sure I have something like that, maybe not necessarily on my website, but like, you know, where you broke it down and you explained it. You know, okay, there's the basic studio fee. Here's the cost of what I'm actually doing. And then here's the cost of the usage and here's pickups and that kind of stuff. I definitely need to develop and have my little, my little packet together so that I can answer those questions. That way I'm not running constantly all over the place trying to figure out, oh, they asked this question now. Crap. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now what? You know, so yeah, that's definitely something that I'm working on right now is getting that direct marketing out there. And then networking, I've done tons of networking for my other business. And while I'm there, I'm promoting the VoiceOver as well. The great things that I recommend to anybody, no matter what business you're in, is to get in touch with your small business administration office in your area. And I don't know what that's called in the UK, but in the US, the
Chamber
small business.
Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, well, we've got a Chamber of Commerce as well. But this small business administration is a government program that's specifically for the businesses to connect with, like, counseling. The counselors can help you deal with maybe getting loans or contracts or just education about what it takes to be in business, that sort of thing. And once you get into that little fold of people, they tend to promote you as well. So like there's a woman that's at the Small Business Administration here locally, and she and I go to the YMCA together, and we talked one time and she's like, oh yeah, when I get to work, I actually know a few people. There's a guy from a production company. There's a guy from a marketing firm. There's this lady that does all kinds of live events, and she's like an acting coach and a theater coach. And, you know, like, so yeah, let me put you in contact. And then like the next day she went back to work and she did these introductory emails where she sent an email to her contact and said, hey, I'd like to introduce you to Jessica. And I've copied her on this. And this is what she does. And maybe you two can connect. And so from there, I was able to send my demo. And these people said, yeah, I don't have anything right now, but when I do, I am definitely calling you. That was really great.
A lot of business does come that way, which is quite nice. Yeah. By the way, were you trying to say templates?
Yes. So you say templates and we say template.
I couldn't resist that. That was being really mean. Sorry. And to move on swiftly now.
Okay. Now I have done all the things. How do I know I am a real live voiceover artist?
Oh, this is so exciting. First, you need to check if you are breathing. If you are, that's a really good sign that you're alive.
Check. I'm breathing. Now what?
Lovely. And then like with everything else, you're on a continuum.
Surprise, right? Yes.
I think we touched on it right at the beginning. There's actually no industry standard or certificate that qualifies you once you've done all your training and so on. And once you've got everything set up. So there's nothing to say. You are now a voiceover artist. So it is a bit tricky because you're wondering, am I now a voiceover artist? Though I remember last year when I did my first voiceover course, I spoke to the tutor and I said, when will I know that I'm a voiceover artist? When exactly will I know? Because it feels like you need to have an exact point of reference that tells you that it's like that rites of passage. You need to go to college, you do your course, you do your exam, you get your certificate, then you know you're qualified. It doesn't happen like that with voiceover. There's a debate, not necessarily a debate, I would say, but just different opinions about when you'll call yourself a voiceover artist. So some people say it's when you've received your first paid voiceover job, then you can say you're a qualified professional voiceover artist. Some people say, no, that's not a determining factor. It doesn't matter as long as you're set up and you're ready and you can do work. You might decide to not receive money for work. You might decide to do it on a charitable basis. So that doesn't mean that you're not a professional voiceover artist just because you decide not to receive money. So I think we always need to bear those things in mind. There's always a choice and different ways of working. You need to know, what is your goal? Is your goal to make lots of money, or is it to just do lots of voiceover work because it's your passion, it's your hobby, and you're not going to charge for it, or somewhere in between?
I would agree. I think if you have a goal in mind and you have met that goal, then you could certainly call yourself a professional voiceover artist if you have met whatever benchmark you set for yourself. I also think that it's important to say that you probably need to have a little bit of training under your belt, and maybe mentorship or something like that. I can't think of anybody that I have talked to or I've heard of that has said, yeah, I'm a voiceover professional and I never had any training. If it exists, that's an anomaly. So making sure that I would say some sort of coaching or training probably applies before you're professional.
I agree. Absolutely. We've seen a huge number of actors becoming voiceover artists, particularly last year in 2020 with lockdown. So would you consider somebody who's got the acting background saying that they're a voiceover artist because they've purchased a mic?
I mean, I suppose they could be. I mean, part of your training is learning how to act. You know, you don't just read straight copy. You are acting. So I think somebody could call themselves a professional.
In fact, some people would actually say that voiceover is acting. It is.
Oh,
Every all kinds of voiceover is acting. So that's another opinion.
Yeah. In fact, one of the monikers is what? Voice actor. Yeah.
You said that you've done a variety of projects. You've done some charity work and some projects that you've absolutely done for pure passion.
Let's see here. So I've done some audiobooks, like over 30 of them. I unfortunately was one of those people that didn't catch on to the scam thing for a little bit. And then I figured it out and I'm like, dang it, these are on my record. Oh no. You know, but live and learn. And then I voiced some animated pieces that were people's passion projects, you know, so they were willing to pay me, but they didn't have a lot to pay. And I was okay with that because I wanted to be a part of the project. And so that was okay for me. Will I do that all the time? No, I won't. But if I find a project that I want to do, then great, I'll do it. And like right now, actually, I'm working on a project of guided meditations for somebody who is dealing with a ton of stress, and it's somebody that I know and I care about. And so I'm like, you know what? I'll just do this. I'm not going to charge you anything. And it's good for me too. It helps me develop that skill some more.
Sure. I mean, similarly, I provided voiceover for university website just to talk about a specific project that they've been developing over the summer. So for me, I regard that piece of work as a professional piece of work, even though I didn't get paid for it, because it's on a university website, which is obviously a very well-established organization.
Yeah.
Different projects have different meanings, mm-hmm. and it's not necessarily always about whether you're getting paid or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's it's an important point to make, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you certainly don't, if your goal is to make this your full-time job, you can't necessarily do everything for free, but you can certainly do some of it free, and the other key to that, I think, is just not to let people take advantage of your kindness.
No.
You know, no. I see plenty of projects come through some of the different pay-to-plays. Well, one in particular where they're like, we don't have a budget. It's just for, that would be really good for your exposure or whatever. And then some of that you're just like, oh, what, garbage? No. I'm not going to do that. But then there's others that you're like, you know what? I could get behind this. I want to support this nonprofit or whatever it is. And that's cool. You do it.
I think we've had another episode full of lots and lots of information to consider. What do you think?
Oh.
Lots for people to take in today.
Lots to take in. Absolutely. Lots to think about. Lots to do some follow-up research on. Absolutely.
Well, I'd like to thank all our lovely listeners for joining in this week's VoiceOver Girls Across the Pond podcast. We hope you'll join us again next time.
Yes. And if you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe to the VoiceOver Girls Across the Pond podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can also join our Facebook group where you can connect with us at facebook.com/groups/voiceovergirlsacrossthepond. So until the next episode, take care. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for the VoiceOver Girls Across the Pond podcast. This is where we would normally shout out to our sponsors.
Rami, we don't have any sponsors yet.
I know, but if we did, this would be the shout out. Hint, hint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast.
And tell all your friends, your family, your neighbors, and everyone else.